Welcome to episode 132 of the Fertility Podcast. I'm Natalie Silverman, your host. If this is your first listen, welcome. I hope that wherever you are at with your fertility journey, you're up for kind of having a listen to some other people's stories in a bid to make you feel less alone. I've also spoken to lots of fertility experts all around the world about all sorts of different issues. So if you found me on iTunes, you can rate and review this podcast to help other people find it, and you can have a listen to all the other episodes. Or if you're on the fertilitypodcast.com, there's a little search box where you can type in maybe something specific that you want to know more about. My story is that we had successful ICSI treatment in 2014. My son is now three. We have three frozen embryos and are hoping to have another child. We are trying as well. It's one of those difficult places to be, dealing with secondary infertility as well. If that's where you're at, I have put out a few episodes and blog posts talking about it. And what I will say, if that is where you're at, do go and have a read, because I think it's a really important thing to also know that you're not alone in how you might be feeling. And it's okay to say that you want to have another child, as much as you are so delighted to have one child already. When you've been through fertility treatment, you're still on that journey. The other thing to make sure you know about is the ultimatefertilityguide.com. I've just launched it. It's a new directory of all areas of the fertility industry. So there's companies listed there and you can see what they do, link through to their website. And I'm doing live streamed interviews with them so you can ask them questions on Facebook. The first one starts on May the 1st with Pamela Hirsch of the Baby Quest Foundation. And it's something for you if you are a permanent resident of the United States and you're looking to get some assistance in the financing of your IVF treatment. The round they've got open is till the 23rd of May, and Pamela's going to be answering questions about the application process. All you need to do is go to the Ultimate Fertility Guide on Facebook, like the page, and that's where the stream will be happening. Then on May the 3rd, we have Nicola Salmon, who is a fertility coach, talking about the negative impact of the diet culture on your fertility. So what I'm just trying to create is more opportunities for you to ask questions directly rather than it just being me. I will be interviewing all of my lovely guests, but like I say, they'll be on Facebook Live for you to join in too. Now, I confess, I've actually changed this episode that I'm putting out today. It's a lady who I've met on Instagram, and Fertility Network, Kat at Trying Years, who was on my episode last week, was talking on Instagram about raising the awareness of people finding the community, because it's massively supportive. And I want to do that here in this podcast. If you are listening and haven't yet looked into Instagram, it's an amazing, amazing thing that's happening. Hashtags like TTC, infertility, IVF, IVF support, IVF stronger together are all ways in which you will find people who you can identify with, I assure you. And the lady who we're going to be hearing from today had been sharing her journey and that she'd had IVF treatments abroad, which is something I've spoken about in the past, from people helping you to go abroad and have your treatment. And I wanted to talk directly to somebody about their experience. And the lady I'm going to speak to has literally just come back from North Cyprus, and she's had a really challenging journey, not only having to deal with failed cycles, but also the realization that she was going to have to use a donor egg. So do have a listen. I think you will find it really inspiring. And if you are thinking of having treatment abroad, I think it gives you some really good tips on how to manage the whole experience and get the best out of it. The Fertility Podcast is sponsored by OvuSense. If you've been trying to monitor your cycle and finding it just overwhelming, you need to use OvuSense. It's the only ovulation monitor that offers 99% clinically proven accuracy for ovulation confirmation. So when you want to take control and you want to know exactly what is going on with your fertility, OvuSense is the best choice. To find out more, just visit OvuSense.com. And if you use the code FERTILITYPOD, all in capital letters, you'll get a 25% discount. I'm now going to welcome Shima to the podcast, who on Instagram is 1_in_7. I'll put all the details in the show notes, to talk about her journey. So Shima, welcome.
Hi there, Natalie. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, I was really interested to know more about your story, having seen your various posts and your amazing range of sunglasses on Instagram.
You've got to get the accessories, don't you, really?
Well, exactly. I was like, oh, sunglass envy again. Because I always want to showcase the different elements that affect our route to parenthood.
I guess there's nothing about my route to parenthood that has been straightforward. It's been the opposite of that. So my husband and I have been trying to conceive for just over 4 years. I'm nearly 42 now, so we were a bit older when we started trying. So I wasn't... I guess it was always in my mind that we could run into some problems because I was in my late 30s, but I had no idea we'd run into the series of problems that we've had. So we'd been trying for about 6 months. Naturally, nothing was happening, standard story. Got referred for IVF through the NHS very quickly because of my age.
Yeah.
Was really lucky to get 2 cycles of IVF in before I turned 40. But sadly, both of them were a disaster because I have Duff ovaries. That's not a medical term, by the way. So I never produced any eggs of any quality whatsoever. I didn't even get to transfer in both those cycles. And that was the first real hit to me. I'd always anticipated that I might need IVF because of my age, but I hadn't ever thought that IVF wouldn't work.
Right.
That was difficult.
Before we talk more about getting your head around that, the initial tests where they talked to you about needing IVF, was there no indication of your kind of egg health, any tests done in those earlier stages?
Not really. I mean, we have bog standard NHS IVF, so it isn't really tailored to the individual to that degree. Mm. They don't do things like measure your AMH levels. I mean, they checked my follicle count and it was low at baseline. I work as a doctor, so it's quite easy for me to interpret all the results. So the doctors were all reassuring, but I kind of knew when I was looking at the scans and interpreting them as they were scanning me, which is a weird position to be in.
Yeah, I bet.
But I kind of second guessed along the way that I was going to run into problems. I'm really keen to emphasise that the care I received in the NHS was absolutely excellent. I wouldn't fault it in any way. It's not their fault that the IVF didn't work.
So the 2 cycles, did you have them relatively close together?
Yeah, I had them pretty much one after the other because I was so close to 40 that we just had to bang on straight through them.
Is that stressful?
Yes, it was. I've never found the actual IVF process very difficult. Because I am medical, I'm not fazed by injections or medication. I feel very comfortable in a hospital environment. I feel pretty comfortable around doctors and nurses. So that bit's never fazed me. But of course, the emotional toll of, it's just all the waiting around, isn't it, with IVF? There's a lot of waiting for results and waiting for tests and waiting for different stages. And I've always found that really difficult to deal with.
You'd been sharing this on Instagram from the outset, had you?
No, actually, I didn't even know about the amazing TTC IVF Instagram community until my 3rd cycle.
Right.
So these 2 cycles I was just doing on my own, feeling quite isolated, feeling like I was the only person in the world to fail 2 cycles of IVF.
Sure.
Obviously now I know that's not the case. So we went in for our appointment after the 2nd cycle failed. And I knew it was bad news because the doctor was crying when she was telling me the news.
Aww.
And I think it's because she identified with me. She was a similar age. She's Asian female doctor. She was saying that really the chances of me conceiving with my own eggs was minimal. And the only option, in her opinion, would be for donor egg conception. So that was hard. That's a big thing to have to confront, especially because I hadn't hit 40 by that stage. I just assumed I'd have been able to conceive with my own eggs. So that was a tough point in our journey.
And did you have any kind of conversations, any counselling along the way? I know you said you got that medical background, so you're fully aware of what there is out there support-wise, but I'm interested as to whether you put yourself into that and explored it a bit more.
Yeah, I did. I've actually been in psychoanalysis for quite a long time, for about 10 years anyway, just because I find it helpful. So that has always been a huge help to me because it gives me a space to be able to think about things in more detail. So I've been lucky to have that throughout this time. A friend of mine sent me a newspaper article. It was an interview in The Guardian with somebody who was in her 40s who'd opted for donor egg conception. And I found that article really inspiring. It radically changed my perception of what it means to be a mother and what donor egg conception might be. So that was a really positive step, and it allowed me to open my mind to that possibility.
What kind of things did it say?
It was all about embracing, creating families in alternative ways, that motherhood isn't about the genetic material in the egg. There's so much more to motherhood than that. And also the joy of having a child who is through donor conception, where you can't imprint your own ideas of what that child's going to be. You can't look in your into your child's eyes and say, oh, they've got my eyes, or they've got my nose, or they've got grandma's teeth, or whatever. You, in a way, that forces you to allow your child to just develop in the way that they're going to develop. And I thought that was such a positive statement, and that helped me move towards donor conception quite easily. I know that some people really struggle with that, and I can see why, but we moved to that decision very quickly. I'm a very pragmatic person, and what I didn't want to do was spend thousands and thousands of pounds trying to flog my dead ovaries, basically. I'd rather, I'm just pragmatic. I just thought, I really want to be a mum. I want to do it whilst I'm young enough to be able to enjoy it, and so it's not going to be too complicated, so I thought. I'd rather just get on. This is a really good option. So we moved to donor egg conception within weeks, actually.
And just talk to me a bit about that process, because, I mean, I've spoken to organisations like Altrui and Donor Concierge in the UK and America about how they work with people to find donors. And
yeah, okay. So we've used two donors now. The first donor was in the UK, and we made a very considered decision to try in the UK first, because it's open donation, it's not anonymous. And my husband and I felt really strongly that any children that we have should be able to be in contact with their genetic donor parent if they need to. And that was something we really wanted to support. So we were keen to have donor conception here in the UK. There was a complicating factor for me, because I'm Asian and there's a real shortage of donor eggs. If you're from a black minority ethnic community background, it's really difficult to find a donor, because culturally people just don't donate. So that makes it very hard. And if there's one thing I would really want to flag up, is that we really need donors from other cultural backgrounds. There's a desperate shortage. So what I did was I phoned every single private clinic up in London and asked them if they had any eggs, any Asian donor eggs. And I got through to a clinic. So finally, there was one clinic in London, one of the sort of big name top London clinics, that happened to have two Asian donors on their books with eggs in their sort of frozen egg bank.
Amazing.
Because we'd been told to prepare for a wait of up to 2 years to find a matched Asian donor.
Right.
So the fact that we found one straight away was amazing.
And good for you you said you're pragmatic, but, you know, for just carrying on regardless, making those phone calls and sticking to your plan of staying in the UK, because you could have at that point said, OK, maybe we go to America.
Yeah, absolutely. We were so keen to do it here in the UK, and to sort of thinking about, I guess we thought about it on that level of what, because you're already a parent. Once you start going down this route, you're already parenting. So we're already thinking, what do our future children need from us in terms of their identity, 15, 16 years down the line. So we found a donor very quickly. And basically within 6 months, I was back having my third cycle, this time with donor eggs at this big fancy pants London clinic. Hugely expensive. I mean, just prohibitively expensive.
Right.
And we were really optimistic. Everyone had led us to believe that this was the way forward. Donor egg conception always works. This is how you can get a baby. We'd had some donor counselling, which you have to do before the process starts. And everyone had been very positive. And then our third cycle failed. And so we'd had the transfer of two top quality blasts and nothing. And that's probably one of the lowest points I've been at in my journey, because I felt that I'd already grieved so much and I'd already compromised so much. Mm. And that here we were again, having spent this time nearly £25,000,
wow,
with nothing to show for it. But determined to carry on, so we picked ourselves up. And within 2 months, I went for my fourth cycle.
Okay.
We had a transfer of two embryos and I got pregnant last February.
Right.
Which was amazing to finally get there. But sadly, my son was stillborn last summer. I was 21 weeks when I got pregnant, so just over 5 months. So our son, Altair, was born on the 10th of June last year. My waters broke on the London Tube, of all places.
Oh my goodness.
The worst place.
Yeah.
Well, it's never a good place, but just such a public way. Mm. I was rushed into hospital and the doctors they had to make a decision to deliver the baby to save my life. So I was induced and I delivered my son at 21 weeks. He was obviously too small to survive. Yeah, what can you say? We'd been through so much, mm, and you kind of think, how much bad luck can you possibly have? And then you realise that there's no such thing as bad luck comes in threes. You can just have shitty luck and it can carry on.
Carry on.
Really. There's no rhyme or reason. I mean, it's the worst thing you can imagine happening to you.
There's no easy way to talk about a subject like this.
No.
And thank you for being open to talk about it. I know that you've shown various posts and kind of marking Altair on your Instagram. And one of the things I've talked about in the past with regards to losing a child and miscarrying is that marking and that process and how that's helped you. And is it fair to say that that has helped, and there's been the support obviously from the Instagram community?
Yeah, absolutely. I made a decision very early on to be very open about what had happened to us, both the loss of Altair but also the IVF. So I'd not been public about the IVF until we lost Altair, and then I just thought, I'm not going to lie about things anymore or pretend that things aren't happening. So I went public with everyone that we know in our sort of personal group of friends, family, and I've been very open on Instagram. And that's partly because it helps me to process what's going on. It's allowed me to build a community. I've made a whole group of friends through Instagram, five special friends who we now call, we've termed ourselves the Pineapple Queens.
Oh, right.
They are five very close friends who have all gone through multiple cycles of IVF, losses, and we now speak to each other every day. We meet regularly in person. We don't actually spend that much time on Instagram talking anymore because we actually are friends.
You're all literally located nearby.
Yeah, we're all in London. That's been, I can't really state enough how important that's been in terms of my healing. But on a sort of professional level, because a lot of my work is about women's health. My research and my clinical work is about promoting women's reproductive rights.
Okay.
And so for me professionally as well, it's really important to use my experience to open up conversations that perhaps are a bit taboo and that people find difficult, and to also to use what's happened to me to advocate for better care. That, to me, gives me a sense of meaning to something that is otherwise just utterly cruel and meaningless. Mm. And that's really helped.
You sadly lost Altair last summer, and then I'm assuming there needs to be a period of recovery, because from what you described, there was obviously complications. And was that you taking time out of work and just taking time out for a little while?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't take much time out. I mean, sadly, because if you deliver a baby between 20 to 24 weeks, you're in some sort of limbo. It's not formally classed as stillbirth, although it is stillbirth because you've given birth and gone through labour, but you're not entitled to maternity leave. So so it's a weird position to be in because you've pretty much gone through anything that someone would have gone through delivering a baby at 24 weeks.
Right.
So yeah, I took about a month off work and then went back. I probably didn't need to, but I wanted to keep myself busy and to find some sort of distraction. So I think that was a good thing. It's not for everyone, but it definitely helped me. We both very early on decided we wanted to try again. I don't think that's unusual after baby loss. Mm. I think you have just a really strong biological urge once you've lost one. that everything's heightened, really.
Sure.
So we were very keen to get going and try again. I didn't want to go back to my previous clinic, even though they'd managed to get me pregnant. And they're a clinic with a very good reputation. I thought the care was really bad, actually.
That's a shame.
Didn't have a positive experience, so I didn't want to go back. So I had our last remaining embryo transferred to a new clinic under a new doctor who isn't at one of the big London clinics, but is a friend of a friend. And he's just really kind and nice, and he works with me and he communicates really well. I can get hold of him if I need to, and we can make joint decisions about my care, which is really important to me because
I have
a really complicated pregnancy immune condition that's likely to come back in future pregnancies, and it puts me at high risk of more stillbirth. So it's really important that I work with my team of doctors looking after me to try and navigate that and figure out how to treat it.
Okay.
And it's really important for me to feel like I'm involved in my care. And with my new consultant, that's what happens. So whatever happens in the future, whether IVF works out for us or not, I'm sticking with him because his care has been fantastic.
Well, that's amazing to hear. And am I right in saying that he's also known as the dude?
Yeah, I call him the dude. He doesn't know that yet.
He doesn't like a white Russian or anything like that.
No, but not as far
not
as I know.
Not whilst he's working.
Not whilst he's working, definitely not. But he's calm, he's laid back, he's incredibly kind. He's just a really great guy. And he just really wants to get me pregnant, I can tell. He just really wants this to work out.
Amazing.
For me.
Amazing, well, that's helps. What we want. We want that determination, don't we?
Absolutely. So we transferred our last embryo to his clinic. I had another transfer in November. That didn't work. That was okay, to be honest. We'd kind of gone through the motions. I kind of saw that as a cycle to just gear me up psychologically to get back into IVF again. And because we'd been through so much that year, getting a negative pregnancy test result is just, we've had such a big dose of perspective.
Right.
But that, in comparison to everything else we've been through, is not that much to have to deal with.
Sure. Did you share that cycle?
Yes, I started sharing my cycles from my third cycle onwards. So
right.
The third cycle that failed, then the fourth cycle that succeeded, I shared the journey through our pregnancy as our pregnancy started going wrong very openly on Instagram. And then I became much more public on Instagram after we lost Altair. That's when I started posting photos of my face and talking about our personal life much more openly. There's been a real process in sort of finding my feet on social media and feeling comfortable. Mm. But now I don't feel like I've got anything to lose. And I actually feel incredibly proud of everything that we've gone through. So I'm not ashamed of showing my face or using my name, because actually I think we've really gone through a lot to get to this point, and that's nothing to be ashamed about.
No, definitely not. And I think it's amazing that Instagram has given this TTC community this place. It seems somewhat, I want to say, more positive than, say, Facebook, despite people being really open and honest about when things don't work, because there seems to be such support. And I know that there are in Facebook groups, but I don't know, I'm a bit afraid of some of the Facebook support groups, because maybe it's because you're accompanying what you're sharing on Instagram with beautiful pictures that the discussion point is softened. I don't know, it doesn't take away the importance of what's being discussed, but it just seemed a really caring place.
Yeah, it's different, isn't it? I mean, I'm a member of one Facebook group for this pregnancy condition that I have, and I very rarely go onto that group because I find it really depressing.
That's what I was trying to say. That's what I was just skirting around saying.
Yeah, I find it not a very healthy space for me to be in. Whereas with the Instagram community, I don't know what it is. There's something special about it. It has a different quality. Mm. And you form just as close connections with people. I mean, there's some ladies I've been following on Instagram now for over 2 years who I haven't met, but they feel like close friends and I'm highly invested in their journeys. Mm. You know, I'll wake up and I want to just see what's happening in their lives. And just this morning, one of my Instagram friends, Ali, who sadly lost her little girl a few months ago, just sent me this really beautiful card and sort of collection of healing crystals to just wish me luck over the weekend. So it's stuff like that that makes a huge difference. And I never expected to get that from social media.
Sure. Let's talk about where you're at. Let's talk about the beautiful pictures that you've shared of a trip to Cyprus and of your decision to go abroad for your treatment, because that's what drew me to ask if I could talk with you. Because that in itself, I mean, you've taken on a hell of a lot. You've been through so much, and then you've decided to go away to have further treatment.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone had told me 4 years ago that I'd be here talking to someone on a podcast about my sixth cycle of IVF.
We were just talking about feeling old with technology. You know,
I know.
We're so with it.
Not bad for a nearly 42-year-old. when the last cycle failed, we were kind of prepared for that. The last embryo we had wasn't really of great quality, so we had already started exploring options. We would have loved to have stayed in the UK and had another donor around here, but there were no Asian donors that we could find. We had to make a really pragmatic decision again to go to where we knew we could find a donor who may not even match my ethnicity, but at least would have similar colouring. So a lot of the donors in the egg banks were blue-eyed, blonde-haired, which I'm most definitely not. My husband's pale-skinned ginger. We needed to have some of my colouring in there for me to feel a connection.
Yeah.
We knew we'd have to go abroad. My doctor, the dude, partners with a few clinics. So he works with a clinic in Spain and in America and also in Cyprus. So we talked to him about our options and weighed it up. And we decided to go for Cyprus, North Cyprus, firstly because I thought the chances of finding a donor who matched my colouring was going to be much higher there, because Turkish Cypriot women are probably going to be darker skinned with darker hair. And also it was a clinic that my doctor has had a very long-standing partnership with. He's worked with them for years and years and years, and he trusts them. And I trust my doctor. So we decided to really go to Cyprus just because of that, just to find the right kind of donor. I'd never anticipated going for IVF abroad. It seemed very scary. What helped was the fact that everything was being organised through my London clinic. So that adds to the cost. It would have been cheaper if we'd gone directly through to Cyprus.
Right.
But for me, it was worth paying a little bit extra to have everything coordinated in the UK. So it meant, as we geared up for the cycle, it was my doctor here who was doing all my scans, who was prescribing my medication, who was doing my blood tests. Everything was really carefully linked between the UK and Cyprus. They arranged all the sort of admin side of things. It just meant for a smoother process.
I think that's definitely a concern of people going abroad, is it feeling disjointed and that worry that you might then have about whether it's all going to be okay. And especially if you're going somewhere, I mean, you've had an amazing kind of endorsement from your doctor, but if you're going somewhere that you don't have that. So it's really interesting that you took that time and you developed that relationship with your doctor. You were, I mean, amazingly fortunate and were able to carry that on. Would that be a key bit of advice that you'd say to people if they're able to, is to get that support in a decision going abroad?
I think so. I think if you can afford it, it does add substantially to the cost. But if you can afford to have joint care between the UK and a clinic abroad, that to me has been really invaluable. And it's just helped me navigate the process. So simple things such as, there's so much stuff that you have to sort out when you do IVF abroad. Where we were in Famagusta in North Cyprus is not a particularly big tourist destination. You need to sort out accommodation, transport, all sorts of things. And to have a link in the UK who can link with the clinicians abroad really does help sort out those practical issues. We were really lucky, actually, when they actually found an Asian donor, which we did not expect.
Okay.
We thought we'd have a Turkish Cypriot donor. So that was an amazing thing for us. And so everything went really smoothly. The donor was synced to my cycle. I started gearing up for the cycle in mid-March, and we went over early April, not really knowing what to expect, feeling slightly anxious. I would say really just a very positive experience so far. We won't know until the weekend whether it's worked or not, because I'm in the dreaded 2-week wait at the moment. But I'm glad I'm speaking to you now, because I feel I can give you a much more candid assessment where it's not based on the actual result.
Sure.
It's actually based on the experience. I mean, one thing I would say about doing IVF abroad, and I don't know how it would be in other clinics, I wasn't prepared for the difference in medical cultures. It is different. So I'm used to being with a consultant where I'm very involved in my care, and I make decisions with him and he explains everything really carefully. It's not like that. North Cyprus, certainly. I went for my first appointment. I was just ushered into a room. My husband wasn't allowed to come behind the curtain with me. It was a very old-fashioned examination table with my legs in the air. It was quite disembodying, really. And the doctor literally said nothing to me and stuck a wand in me for 3 seconds and said my lining was poor, which it hadn't been in the UK. So that was really upsetting, and he didn't want to get into a conversation with it and was trying to recommend some weird treatment that would cost me more money that I thought had no evidence behind it.
Okay.
So I think what helped me in that situation, because you can be really vulnerable, because there you are having spent thousands of pounds, you're abroad, you were hoping to have your embryo transfer, and now a doctor's telling you that your lining is too thin and you need, you know, their special treatment that costs an extra €200. Mm. And, you know, it would be easy to just shell out the money, but I'm really adamant that I don't want to be put in a position where I'm exploited because of our position. Mm. So we left feeling a bit dejected and me feeling a bit sort of like a piece of meat, to be honest. This is where having the UK doctor is really important. I phoned my UK doctor, chatted to him. He said, look, this is a load of rubbish. I'm going to speak to them. You don't need to have this weird treatment. I've reviewed your scans. I scanned you last week. Everything's fine. Your lining's not going to become thin in a matter of days. Forget about it. And that was really reassuring. So again, that's why it was so important to have that link.
Although, how did that make you feel about your ongoing then care with this clinic?
I've got to be honest. We, at that point, thought, okay, well, we have different feelings about this clinic now. My approach to this clinic is very much that they're there to make embryos and to stick the embryos inside me. That's the limit of what they do. I'm not expecting them to provide my medical care. My medical care is going to be provided by my doctor in London. He's the person who I'm going to be guided by and who I'm going to trust. That I'm basically just seeing, this sounds awful, I'm just seeing them as technicians.
Yeah.
They're just doing the baby bit and sticking
the embryos.
But I think
you need to remove yourself, don't you? Because of what you've gone through, and you know the process, and you, if it was your first time, it probably would have been a very different mindset, but you know what's going on and you just need it done.
Absolutely. And I think you're right. And that's what my husband said, because I was saying, oh, we should have done IVF abroad right at the beginning. And he said, we wouldn't have been able to do it. We couldn't have withstood it. Mm. It's only because we're such experienced IVF patients.
Yeah, it's sad, but true.
Yeah, we know the ropes and we're quite robust. So yeah, we were only able to cope by actually seeing them as just providing this one service, not expecting to get care from them. There was a lot of chasing of results. So it's very different to how it is in London, where, you know, you'd get your embryologist phoning you up on day one, day three, day five. There was none of that. We really had to chase quite hard to get results, and sometimes it was like getting blood out of a stone. But
because you went out there for how long?
We were there for 10 days. So when you go out for your first cycle where they need to make the embryos, you need to be there for between 7 to 10 days.
Right.
Because it depends on when the donor comes in for her egg collection. And actually, I'm really glad we did stay out for that long, because we were able to, in that week, when we were waiting to see how many embryos we had, we were able to have some time off.
In a pretty lovely looking hotel.
Yeah.
It looks from what you've shared on Instagram.
Yeah, we stayed in a lovely, so we had a really lovely Airbnb cottage right in the middle of the old city.
Right.
And then last day we stayed in a fancy hotel. We would never have visited that part of Cyprus before if it wasn't for this. And I sort of see that as one of the silver linings, one of the things that IVF has given us is this opportunity to explore a new part of the world. And prior to all of this infertility and loss that's happened to us, we, my husband and I, were travellers, were people who've always loved travelling and going to new places. Yeah, we loved being there. And usually in all my other IVF cycles, I've carried on doing a pretty full-on job through the IVF. This is the first time I've ever done a cycle and just stopped and I haven't worked, which felt really weird, but actually was really good. It was just my husband and I together, pretty much on holiday, gorgeous weather. Turkey's brilliant for, also Northern Cyprus is brilliant for IVF-friendly food. There was fresh pomegranate juice, loads of fresh chicken, avocado, salads.
Lovely.
It was just a great place to be. And I was probably the most relaxed I've been through an IVF cycle. And we got to day five. We had a day five transfer of two really high-quality blasts. Next day we found out we had another four high-quality blasts to go into the freezer. And that for us, regardless of what the test shows on Saturday, that I think is an amazing result and makes going out to Cyprus worth it, because the care may... the care may not have been exactly what I would have imagined or expected, but they did their job.
You got the result.
Yeah, I mean, we've, you know, made it to a day five transfer with two blasts. Amazing. And we've got four in the freezer, and I can't ask for more than that. My experience of being abroad and having IVF was really positive. I love being in a sunny place. I like being, if I'm not physically removed from London, I will just work. So I need to actually be extracted. So I think that was really good for me. And we fell in love with that tiny bit of Northern Cyprus. And, you know, actually, although obviously we hope that the test is positive over the weekend, if it isn't, we're kind of thinking, well, you know what, we'll just go back later on in the year, take another week out, go back to these places that we now really love.
Yeah. How amazing that you gave yourself a little bit of a holiday amongst all of this, because I know from all the different people that I speak to how all-consuming it becomes, and taking that time to stop and to put yourself in a sunny place when it's been so horrible in the UK as well. I mean, it must have just been such a good tonic for you.
It really was. It was really uplifting. It was actually a really special time, partly because we went out there with minimal expectations. You don't go out sort of to have IVF abroad thinking you're going to have a fantastic holiday. To come back feeling well-rested and to have really enjoyed ourselves was, you know, it was such a surprise. And it's really, yeah, it's been a real boost when, you know, We've definitely needed that after the past 12 months.
Yeah. Well, everything crossed. Everything
Thank
crossed.
You.
And I've seen pictures of pineapples on the side of buildings and hopefully all the stickiness that is needed. And I don't want to dwell on this point, because let's just wait. And
yeah, fingers
crossed.
You've
done everything you can do, haven't you?
Absolutely. I think we've put ourselves in the best position. And you know what? If it doesn't work, you know, what's the worst that's going to happen? We're just going to try again.
So for your last bit of advice for anybody listening about the going abroad, any fears that people might have, I mean, you made really valid points about the care and the way to approach it. Would you say that it's not the best thing to do first time, that it's a better thing to think about if sadly you do have to have repeat treatment after failed cycles?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so hard, because different people reach that stage at different points in their journey. I'm sure there are some people who in their first cycle would be able to withstand going for IVF abroad. And again, it depends on what the clinic is like. Certainly my experience, I'm not sure I would have been able to handle it in my first, second cycles. It has helped being an expert patient. The key things for me were also having that link with a UK doctor. So I'd really recommend that. And to also appreciate the sort of medical systems, the culture of medical systems, and the way doctors are, may differ when you're going to a different country, and to just be prepared for that, but to also, you know, be prepared to stand your ground. And I know that's sometimes a bit easier for me because I'm a doctor, but actually sometimes it's not easy for me when I've got my legs in the air and I'm on a couch. It's just as hard as it is for anyone else. So, but, you know, I think it's really important to, you know, be out there and to really feel that you can stand your ground and question things, and, you know, you have every right to get answers, because you're paying a lot of money, and you know, you should have your questions answered. For us, it's been a positive experience.
Sheema, thank you so much for sharing your journey, and
no problem.
Look forward to just seeing more of you on Instagram, and like I said, I'll put all your details. Do you write a blog as well? Because I know you'd said something about writing a post about your treatment abroad, or are you just referring to writing a more lengthy treatment synopsis for Instagram?
Yeah, I'm probably going to do it on Instagram. I keep meaning to start a blog, but it just never happens. And I think my husband already feels a bit like a social media widow. So if I started a blog on top of that, he might actually divorce me.
Well, you can share this. You can share this as your story about it if you haven't
Absolutely.
Got the time as well. All right. Well, enjoy the rest of your day and this weekend.
Natalie.
And I hope it's all that it can be for you.
Fingers crossed. Thank you.
So I'll put all of Sheema's details on the show notes for this episode, which are thefertilitypodcast.com/Sheema. And I said at the start that I'd changed my plan for the episode I was going to release. And the reason being, Sheema shared over the weekend that she's had a positive result. She's pregnant. And I checked that she was happy for me to share this story today, because it's going out at the end of April in 2018. And she said yes. So if you are on Instagram and following her, I'm sure you've already shared your kind of congrats with her. If you're thinking about going on Instagram, just hearing Sheema talk about the friendships that she has found, I think that's probably enough encouragement to make you go and have a little dabble. And her advice on how to manage treatment abroad, I think, was really, really good. And I hope if it's where you're at, you found it useful. Thank you, as always, for your support. And until the next time.